Hi, this is Dr. Tina Webb, and you are listening to the Coping Season Podcast, the show that discusses mental and emotional wellness to help Black men and Black women begin to heal and cope with the effects of emotional distress. Although I am a licensed clinical social worker, please note that this podcast is not meant to be used as a substitute for a relationship with a licensed therapist. Get ready to laugh, think, and be entertained. It's time to cope. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I've been looking so forward to talking to you all again, and we've got a lot to talk about today, so let's just get right into it. How many of y'all have seen that new Netflix movie called Malcolm and Marie? It's starring John David Washington, who is Denzel Washington's son, and Zendaya. Now, Zendaya is grown, y'all. Zendaya went and got grown, y'all. I won't give too much away about the movie, but for those of you who have not seen it, it's about this guy named Malcolm, who was played by John Washington, and his girlfriend Marie, who was played by Zendaya. They return home from his movie premiere, and Malcolm is all happy, and he's thinking about what's going to come as a result of this successful movie that he just made. But then the evening suddenly takes a turn as they start to have all these revelations come out about their relationship, and then the strength of their love starts to get tested, y'all. So the film basically centers around just the two of them, and they're working on unresolved romantic issues. And the music, y'all, it is just so good. They have a mix of everything like jazz, R&B, old school soul music, songs that I've never heard before, like "We're Your Friends and We Got Some Good Advice. Before you let him break your heart, you better think twice. He isn't worth the tears you're crying. He's only out to break your heart. Him with his cheating and his lying. He's gonna rip your dreams apart. But I love him, and there's nothing I can do. Get rid of him, get rid of him, oh no. Do you mean to say you still consider him, Yes, y'all, that is Dionne Warwick, and the song is called Get Rid of Him. See, we've been singing about getting rid of these no good guys since the 60s, since way before then. I'm just kidding. For the guys out there that are listening, some women are no good too, so let's just make it even and fair. But that is not what the movie is about. And also too, the movie is filmed in black and white, and it is just so beautiful. Aesthetically, it's beautiful. But there is some ugliness going down in that movie too, y'all. Emotional abuse, narcissism, codependency, and just straight up toxic behavior. Now, the whole movie, though, takes place over the course of one night. Like I said, they're in their house in Malibu. Malcolm is celebrating the release of his latest film. And Marie, she's like listening patiently to him go on and making it all about him. And then later, she starts to confront him about some things. And then from there, it's just this back and forth power struggle. Insults, then they make up, then they fight some more. And it was like watching a boxing match. Fight, 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 then get tired, go back to your corners, then come back out swinging again. The movie is just a breathtaking relationship drama. It's intense, and it feels like we're a fly on the wall spying on a couple having a vicious fight. They are saying all kinds of things to each other, calling each other psychotic, hyperbolic, unstable. They are throwing stuff back up in each other's face, things that they told each other in confidence. Like, has that ever happened to you? You're in a relationship, you feel like you can trust the person, y'all having pillow talk, and just this tender moment, and you disclose something embarrassing or something hurtful, or you tell them something that you've never told anybody before. And then in the moment, you know, they comfort you and they're like, "Baby, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I love you. You don't ever have to worry about anything like that happening when you're with me. I'm gonna protect you. I'm here for you. Thank you for sharing that with me." You know, they say all the things to comfort you, and you feel so safe and so protected. And like I said, just comforted by this person. And then what happens? As soon as they get mad, what do? Throw it right back up in your face. "At least I graduated high school. That's why old boy left you. At least I ain't never been on drugs." People do that, and it's messed up. Men do it and women do it. And that's something my mother always told me. She said, you can't tell a man everything because later he'll throw it right back up in your face. And that's true. And it doesn't just happen in romantic relationships. You know, it happens in friendships. It happens with family members. People will throw stuff back up in your face and make you regret that you ever opened up to them. It's happened to me a few times. And it also happened in Malcolm and Marie. Or if you can't relate to that, then maybe you relate to this. You know, have you ever been in a relationship that left you feeling unappreciated? It left you feeling jealous because you watch your partner. They cater to everyone else's feelings and emotions except for yours. You watch them be so careful not to hurt the feelings of strangers, of their coworkers, of their family members. But then with you, they talk to you any old kind of way. They'll demean you, call you stupid, call you jealous, call you everything under the sun but a child of God, because they've lost respect for you. They feel like they've got you now. Oh, he's not going anywhere. She not going nowhere. I'm telling you, relationships, y'all, come with all kinds of issues. And watching that movie, Malcolm and Marie, it was like watching this roller coaster. It was like an exhausting roller coaster of emotions, them berating each other, then loving each other, manipulating each other, disrespecting each other, then coming together like it's us against the world, yearning for each other, and then going back to fighting again. It felt like I was being nosy, like I was all up in their business. Like when you see someone having an argument and you know you should look away, but you can't because you're nosy, that's what it was like. You're like, what's going on here? Like, what did he say? Ooh, what did she say? Oh, no, she didn't. That's what it felt like when I was watching that movie. And apparently I wasn't the only one watching and feeling like that, because that movie has just sparked so much conversation and debates. And that's because it's real. It's what a lot of people go through in their relationships. One word that I kept on saying as I was curled up on the couch watching this movie, I kept saying over and over, about five times or so, I said, toxic. Ooh, they so toxic. Ooh, that's toxic. So on today's segment of Ask Dr. Tina, I want to read a couple toxic quotes from the film. Malcolm in the film said to Marie, and I quote, "You are by far the most excruciating, difficult, stubbornly obnoxious woman I have ever met in my entire life. I effing love you." And Malcolm also said to Marie, just before he started to disrespect and emotionally abuse and break her down, he said, "You're not the first broken girl I've ever known, effed, or dated." End quote. Now that's toxic, y'all. Now, something Marie had to say, she was talking about like people complimenting her about Malcolm. And she said that they're like, oh, he's so sensitive. He's so romantic. I bet he's sweet, right? And she said, well, I mean, yeah, when he's not being an emotional effing terrorist. Now, that's just a little sample, just a little taste of what Malcolm and Marie had to say to each other. If you watch the movie, you'll see they had a whole lot to say to each other. But we all have known someone, a friend, a family member, a coworker, or even yourself, who has been in an unhealthy relationship. And I'm talking about unhealthy, meaning physically abusive, verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, mentally abusive. When I say unhealthy, it's more than just the occasional argument or disagreement. It's arguing all the time, maybe. Maybe there's disrespect, there's trust issues, extreme jealousy, power struggles, disturbing issues, y'all, and just like a lack of compatibility, toxic relationships. We've all heard of them. You know, we've seen them play out one way or another. And we've all wondered the same thing. Why don't they just break up? Why are they still together? Obviously, they're not happy. So why are they staying together? Why are they stuck in this unhealthy, toxic relationship? Why keep going through all the power struggles and the repeated unresolved arguments about big and sometimes little meaningless things? Why keep arguing to try to prove who's in control, whose needs are going to get met? Why not just move on? Well, some people lose themselves in the relationship. Others might be afraid to start over with somebody new. If someone is in a relationship with a narcissist or an abuser, then it's easy to become a sacrificial lamb and sacrifice your sense of self and individuality in the relationship. Because a narcissistic partner, they're going to dominate the relationship. Their needs come first. They are always going to be right, and you are always going to be wrong. It's easy to develop like low self-esteem and forget who you were before you got into this toxic relationship. Now, in cases like this, people sacrifice themselves out of fear. They don't want to make their partner mad. You don't want to argue. You want to make sure that they're happy, because if they're not, they're going to make your life a living hell. It's toxic. Even in relationships when one person is not a narcissist or an abuser, people still lose themselves in relationships. Even when people have like a good, quote unquote, good relationship, people sacrifice themselves. They compromise themselves and they do things that they may or may not be comfortable with just to please their partner. And they do it out of what they think is love. But over time, in both scenarios, whether you're doing it out of fear or love, the person becomes lost and they become possibly anxious, depressed. They feel powerless. They might feel empty. You feel alone and lonely in the relationship. Like Jill Scott said, 'cause I'm lonely whenever you're around. And then after a breakup, it's even worse. It's devastating because you put everything into that relationship and compromise so much by trying to meet your partner's needs that you forgot all about your own needs. I think that what a lot of people don't understand is that it's impossible to experience real intimacy with a person, to experience togetherness in a relationship when we don't feel safe. When we're not able to be vulnerable and to open up in a relationship, if you're not able to trust your partner to share your thoughts and your feelings without them blowing up and getting mad every time, or them twisting your words so that they can become the victim. Or like if you don't feel safe that you can tell them things about your past or stuff about you that they're not going to throw back up in your face every time they get mad. So when you're in a relationship with someone and you don't feel safe that you can do those things, you can open up, it's going to be difficult to get close to that person or for them to get close to you. Because real intimacy doesn't come from sex. It comes from everything else outside of sex. It comes when you are vulnerable and you're able to talk to each other and you're able to open up. That's the way we maintain safety and autonomy. You know, some people are in relationships with people who don't open up. They never open up because they don't want to get close to somebody. They fear that getting close is going to make them dependent on their partner. And they don't want that because if they open up, they're scared of being judged. They're scared of being hurt. So they avoid real intimacy. They avoid opening up. They avoid being vulnerable. They rather argue, fight, judge you, hurt you. A relationship takes two people. And unfortunately, those two people often bring unresolved issues from their childhood, like trauma and dysfunction. They bring those issues into their romantic relationships. They never learned how to be vulnerable and open up because being vulnerable and dependent was unsafe for them when they were growing up, when they were a child. Now they're grown, they're in these relationships, and they feel threatened by closeness and by having their freedom taken away, their freedom to think how they want, say what they want, behave how they want without having to consider someone else's feelings in the relationship. There are so many people who feel unsafe, whether they're in a relationship or they're not in a relationship. And when they are in a relationship, because they feel so threatened by closeness and autonomy, that's what contributes to a lot of conflict in the relationship. And in many relationships, that conflict, it can become physical or emotional abuse. And when that happens, at some point, you recognize and you know that it's toxic. You know it's unhealthy, but you stay anyway. You might try to minimize and make excuses. Well, I said a lot of bad things to him too. Well, I did cheat on her too. Well, I did provoke him. When he said, let's talk about it later, I did keep getting in his face. We both done wrong, but we love each other. If he didn't love me, he wouldn't get so mad. You make toxic excuses. Some people struggle to leave. They know something isn't right. Something ain't right. Their friends and their family members are telling them it's toxic. That relationship is no good for you, baby. They remind you of all the reasons why you should leave. You know that the relationship is unhealthy. And sooner or later, you are going to leave that person. But for now, you stay. And it's important to keep in mind that the relationship doesn't have to be abusive to be toxic. As a matter of fact, an abusive relationship is different from a toxic relationship, which we'll talk about later on. You can be in a relationship that's not abusive and it's just as dangerous as abusive relationships, because maybe some of the behaviors are subtle. And so you don't notice, or you're not aware that the relationship is harming you, that it's slowly breaking down your self-esteem. You don't notice that you're getting lost in the relationship and disconnecting from yourself. To keep it real, most toxic relationships, they aren't obvious right away. They don't start off like that. Some start off really good. And then over time, it becomes more and more toxic. And that's what makes them so dangerous. And maybe, just maybe, you're the one who's making the relationship toxic. So on today's episode, I want to take a deeper dive into relationship toxicity in the Black community. All of this love is toxic. You're a damn drug, you're toxic. Toxic relationships, y'all, they're draining. They can leave you feeling unhappy after you spent time with the person. You're trying to control each other. You're disrespecting each other. You're over-talking each other, fighting about every little thing. It can be exhausting. And like I said, though, when you're in a toxic relationship, sometimes you might not know for a minute, because when you're in it, it can be hard to see the red flags. But when a relationship is healthy, it feels way different. Are there going to be arguments and disagreements? Yeah, heck yeah. But in healthy relationships, you communicate. You openly discuss those problems. You make decisions together, and you genuinely just enjoy being around each other. You enjoy each other's company. When it comes to intimacy, it's normal and it's human nature for couples to do this dance of like one partner trying to get close and then the other one backing up a little bit, pulling away a little bit. And then the roles reverse, and sometimes the other partner is the one that's trying to get close and the other one backs away a little bit. And this is normal. This is healthy. This is what happens in healthy relationships. They both do this dance and they switch roles every now and then, but they never move too far apart. They just keep a little emotional space between them. There's the pursuer, and then there's the distant lover. Distant lover, 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 lover. You know, Marvin Gaye was on to something when he was singing about that distant lover, y'all, because that distant lover is always going to be pursued. They run, they give a hard time, they let you chase them, but they never completely run away. And then the roles reverse. Sometimes in the relationship, you become the distant lover and the partner becomes the pursuer. And that's just because, like I said, we have a need to keep our independence and our autonomy. And we also have the need for dependency and intimacy. That's why you don't completely run away. We have a need for both of those things in a relationship, in a healthy relationship. But at the same time, when we get in these roles of the pursuer and the distant lover, it's because we also have a fear of being abandoned and also a fear of being too close. So the pursuer, they're going to chase out of fear of being abandoned. They feel like their lover is pulling away, so they're going to pursue them and try to get close. They don't want them to abandon them, to leave them. And the one that's being chased, they're going to run because they also have fear, but they have a fear of getting too close, of losing their independence. Oh, you're putting too much pressure on me. Oh, I just need some air to breathe. Oh, dang, you always up under me. They pull away a little bit. You start calling more and texting them more and you're getting closer. And that's why he may ghost you. So reverse it. Stop pursuing him. Let him chase you. Let him have the fear of being abandoned and you run a little bit. It puts a little emotional space between you and it creates a little comfort zone so that there's not so much pressure and not so much demand on the relationship. And then there's less anxiety, less anxiousness. And it leaves room for you to navigate that distance that's between you. You know, you haven't called him for 2 days. He hasn't called you. It leaves a little room. And he's like, oh, I haven't heard from her for a couple of days. Let me go ahead and reach out and call her. You know, it's like a balancing act, a little dance that you have to learn. And it's not playing games. It's just leaving space between the two of you. It's a balancing act of feeling close enough that you feel safe, you feel secure without feeling threatened by too much closeness. But in toxic relationships, it's a little bit different. People develop unhealthy behaviors and they do things that make it hard to create that little emotional space. They do things that make it difficult to have that comfort zone between each other. Either there's no space at all or there's too much space. The distant lover is running to really get away from you, but the pursuer keeps catching them and dragging them back into the relationship. We saw it in Malcolm and Marie. After their arguments, before the bathtub scene, Marie was the distant lover and Malcolm became the pursuer. And after that bathtub scene, Malcolm became the distant lover and Marie was the pursuer. He emotionally berated her and he abused her. And then he went outside. And what did she do? She came out there trying to connect with him, trying to catch a glimpse of his eyes, trying to do a little smile and trying to smooth it over, trying to play a little music. You know, she was doing things to try to get close and try to make up with him, even after he was the one that was wrong. And he kept running away. Pulling away, pulling away. And as you can see, when there is not enough space or there's too much space between a couple, it's toxic. They talk to each other and they treat each other disrespectfully. They engage in one toxic behavior after another, making the relationship feel more like a chore. It feels more like a routine or a task that they have to do instead of like a loving, enjoyable relationship. Sometimes one person in the relationship may engage in more toxic behaviors than the other person. Or in some cases, you know, both partners engage in behaviors that make the relationship unhealthy. And the things they do and the things that they say is what sucks all of the joy out of the relationship. You know, in any relationship, if you want it to work, there's going to come a time when we got to be accountable for the wrong that we've done. We have to admit sometimes that we were wrong. You know, I was wrong. Baby, I'm sorry. Forgive me. And that can be hard to do. Even in healthy relationships, it can be hard to do, but they do it. For anyone who wants to have a healthy relationship, you have to be able to be held accountable for your behavior. You have to be able to say, hey, I messed up. I was wrong. Like I said, forgive me. You know what? I was tripping. I shouldn't have came at you like that. But some people in relationships, they can't do that. And as a result, they contribute to the relationship being toxic. I'm not going to apologize. You never apologize. You never apologize to me for what you did, for what you said. And it's just this constant back and forth. No one is being held accountable or responsible. I know many of you have heard of attachment theory. And for those of you who have not, attachment theory, it's like it's focused on the relationships and the bonds between people, especially people in long-term relationships, like the bond between a parent and a child or between romantic partners. So attachment theory started out as a way for psychologists to try to understand the separation anxiety and the distress that children feel when they're separated from their primary caregivers, when they're separated from their parents or their grandparent, or whoever takes care of the child. So back in the day, psychologists, they used to believe that attachment was a learned behavior. It's something that we learn. They would say, oh, children are attached to their parent or their caregiver because the parent is the one that feeds them. That's why the child is attached to them, because that the parent is feeding them. And so they did a lot of observations of children with their caregivers, and they watched them feed the child. And they started to notice, like, wait a minute, even after the child has been fed by their caregiver, it still didn't take away the anxiety that the child feels when they get separated from them. Like, a mother could feed her baby and then put her baby in the baby bed across the room, and then the baby will still cry and still be looking for the mother or the caregiver. They just want to be close. They want to be held. When a child feels frightened, they will seek to be close to their primary caregiver in order to receive comfort and care from them. So like I said, attachment has to do with an emotional bond with another person. Now, depending on how healthy the bond is in childhood between a child and their primary caregiver, that has a huge impact on how the person attaches and connects to other people throughout the rest of their lives. And so studies showed back then that, you know, the closer that an infant is to their mother or to their caregiver, the more chance that that baby will survive. Because of attachment theory, we understand that children are born with this drive. They're born with it inside of them, this need to form attachments with their caregiver. It's not a learned behavior. It's just something that's in us. If we look at history, we see that children who maintain like a close proximity to their caregiver, they were more likely to receive comfort and protection, and therefore they were more likely to survive to adulthood. Now, as humans, we need our caregivers to feed us and to protect us so that we can survive. Unlike other animals, some of them are born and they can just be independent. They pop right out and they're independent. They can start walking right away. They go out there, they find food, they can protect themselves. But that's not the case for humans. We have to depend on the care and protection from adults. Now, in childhood, if you were nurtured by your parent or your caregiver and they responded to your needs, you cried and they picked you up, they held you, you cried, they fed you, they changed your pamper, you know, they rocked you, they held you, and you felt comforted and safe and secure, and you had a healthy attachment to your parent or whoever took care of you, then that's considered a healthy, successful attachment. And that person might go on and have healthy attachment with other people later on in life. So based off of how secure you felt in childhood determines your attachment style in adulthood. So basically, if you have a baby and you're available to them and responsive to their needs, then that child will develop a sense of security. They know that you're dependable. They know that you're going to be there. And that creates a secure base for them to go out and explore the world. They're not going to be up under you holding on to your legs every time you get up to go to the kitchen or the bathroom. They feel safe to sit there and play with their toy without you having to be in sight. They feel secure to crawl away and go mess with stuff and do whatever they do, knowing that you're going to be right there when they get back. You're not going to abandon them. They're not going to be searching and crying for you. They don't have anxiety or worry that you're going to leave them, that you're going to abandon them, because you provide them with the support and the protection and the care that they need. So the child believes that you're going to be there for them because previous experiences with you have led them to this conclusion. You've already shown them that. And once a child has developed these expectations, that's what they're going to seek in their relationships with other people. They're going to seek somebody who's dependable, who's there, that they feel safe, they feel secure with. But for those babies and those children who had like inconsistency or negligence from their parent or their caregiver, they're more likely to experience anxiety in their relationships with other people. It's important to know that there's four different types of attachment styles. You know, some children, they develop anxious, avoidant attachment. And with this attachment style, like these are the kids that will go to anybody. It doesn't matter if you're a stranger, if you're a parent, they don't discriminate. They don't have a preference between the two. Like they might run up to a complete stranger and let them hold them, hug them. They might be all in their face. And that could be because maybe the child's parents were abusive, or maybe they were neglected as a child. And if they were punished, like when they cried or when they fell and when they were seeking their parent to comfort or to protect them, if they were punished for that, then they learn to avoid seeking help in the future. They learn to avoid going to their parent for comfort or support. And so they might grow up and they're less effective in managing stressful situations. They withdraw, they resist seeking help. And then that prevents them from forming like satisfying relationships with other people. They tend to also show maybe more aggression or antisocial behavior. Like they might lie a lot. They might bully a lot. And they tend to distance themselves from other people to try to reduce the emotional distress that they feel. Another attachment style is anxious resistant attachment, or also called ambivalent attachment. And this is where like the child becomes very distressed when the parent leaves. They're the kids that, you can't walk out of the room without them crying, throwing a fit. They can't be soothed. They can't be calmed down. You drop them off at school for the first day of school. They're crying. They cannot be calmed down. They're like, you're going to have to come and pick them up. We can't keep them here because we can't soothe the child. So this type of attachment, when kids get like this, normally it's a result of like poor parental availability. Their parent was not there. The children can't depend on their primary caregiver when they need them. They may have bounced from house to house. Maybe they've had multiple people take care of them. Or their parent just wasn't responsive to them. Maybe they just let them cry and never gave them what they needed. And so they develop a lack of self-confidence and they always have to be with their parent. You can't leave them at a babysitter. You can't leave them at anybody's house because they keep crying. Nobody can comfort them. They have to be with the mom all the time. They got to stick close by their caregiver. And then in childhood, you start to see that they have like these big, huge emotional outbursts, like exaggerated emotional reactions. They might keep their distance from their friends or peers, and that leads to social isolation. They have a hard time just regulating their emotions. Another attachment style is disorganized attachment. And you'll see with these children or these babies, they have like a confusing mix of behaviors. Sometimes they might seem disoriented. They seem dazed or confused. And they might avoid or they resist their parent. The parent can't comfort them. They're crying. They don't want to be held by the parent. They won't come to the parent. It's like there's no clear pattern of attachment. Like sometimes they might feel comforted by the parent and sometimes the parent might be a source of fear. So it's just disorganized because the parent may have been inconsistent. Come here, give them a kiss. And sometimes they might be abusive or might be yelling at them. And then they pick them up again and they're, you know, the parent has done something inconsistent and has caused the child to be confused. And that's why they have this disorganized behavior. And a lot of the kids who end up having this type of attachment style, they don't have like a strategy or a way to cope with like their separation distress. So they might become aggressive and they start biting kids. They display aggression and disruptive behaviors and social isolation. Nobody really wants to play with them or be around them because they are so aggressive. And they're more likely to see other people as being a threat as opposed to people being a support to them. And because they see people as a threat, they switch between like them socially withdrawing and them having like defensive, aggressive behavior toward other people. Now, these three types of attachments that I just talked about, they are insecure attachments that kids or people will develop. But there's also a secure attachment. So people or children who develop this secure attachment, they grow up and they're able to depend on their caregiver. You know, they still cry if they get separated, like, you know, first day of school, you drop them off at school and they might cry, but they're able to calm themselves. And they feel joy. They feel happy when you pick them up, when they see you again. But they didn't go through the whole day crying or you had to pick them up because they couldn't be consoled. Children with a secure attachment style, like they're going to be upset, but they know that you're going to return to them. So they have reassurance from you. They know that they can come to you when they feel frightened. They know that they can seek you out for comfort. And so they learn how to regulate their own emotions. And these children, they're more likely to see other people as being supportive and helpful. And they see themselves as being competent and they see that they're worthy of respect and they relate to other people well. You know, they play well with others. They relate positively to other people. They're resilient. They can engage in like complex play at school and they're more successful in the classroom and they're more successful in their interactions with other children. They're able to see the perspective of other people and they're able to trust. So basically, people who are securely attached in childhood, they tend to have good self-esteem. They're able to rely on themselves. They have strong romantic relationships. They have the ability to disclose to other people, to be vulnerable, to open up. They talk about how they feel. When a child doesn't form like secure attachments early in life, it can have a negative impact on their behavior throughout the rest of their life. Those early attachments and those attachment issues can have a serious impact on our relationships. And the children that end up developing the insecure attachments, it might be because they were physically or sexually abused. Maybe they were emotionally abandoned as a kid. Maybe because their parent neglected them, or the parent went to prison for many years, or the caregiver, or maybe the parent was really sick and battling an illness and they weren't able to be there for them. They couldn't give them the responsiveness that they needed or the comfort that they needed. And I'm saying parent, but it could be anyone, because even if somebody didn't have a parent, but they had a grandparent or an auntie or somebody that cared for them and that was able to give them the comfort and the responsiveness that they needed, they can still grow up to have a secure attachment. Some children, they end up having insecure attachments also too, because maybe their parents got divorced or their parent was so into their relationship with their man or woman that they neglected their child. In some cases, the parent or the caregiver may have died. They may have died when the child was young. And because of that separation, they never got the validation, the care, the support, the love that they needed. And then they grow up. And as adults, they're in intimate relationships. They're out here dating. They're out here getting married. And when they feel separated, or they feel like the person is going to leave them, or that the relationship is going to come to an end in some way, those experiences become painful reminders of the loss that they experienced in childhood. So they end up doing things to hold on to the relationship. Even if the relationship is unhealthy, they do things that contribute to the relationship becoming toxic. And that's why I'm talking about these different attachment styles, because they play out in adulthood. They play out in our romantic relationships. The relationship, like I said, between infants and their caregivers and the relationship between adult romantic partners are the same in many ways, like in both types of relationships. Like say on one hand, you have an infant and a caregiver, and then on the other hand, you have a couple that's in a romantic relationship. Now, in both types of relationships, you're going to feel safe when the other is nearby and they're responsive. Like with a parent and a child, the child feels safe when the parent is nearby and the parent is responding to their needs. In a relationship, you feel safe when your partner is with you and they're responding to your needs and you're getting along. In a parent-child relationship, there's close, intimate bodily contact. You know, a parent is holding the baby. You hold them close to your body. You give them kisses. You rock them. They might be breastfed. And then the same thing with couples in relationships. You feel good. You engage in close, intimate bodily contact in a relationship. You have sex with each other. You hug each other. You kiss each other. You sit closely together. And in both types of relationships, it's possible to feel insecure, like a parent and child. You feel insecure when the parent is inaccessible. The child cries. The child feels like they're looking for them. Where are you? The same thing in romantic relationships. If you can't get in touch with your partner and you're calling and calling their phone, they're not answering. You feel insecure. What's going on? Wait a minute. Why aren't they answering my calls, my texts? How come they didn't come straight home? So you feel insecure when you can't get to them. In both types of relationships, you share discoveries with each other, like the parent and the child. The child might pick up something and the parent is like, oh, what is that? Where did you get that? Or the child might bring something to you and you tell them what it is. Hot, don't touch that. Come here, throw that in the trash. And you teach them things and you share things that you've discovered. Same thing in your relationships. Your partner might share with you something new that they learned. They might plan a trip somewhere that they just discovered was so amazing and they want to share it with you. And then also between a child and a parent, there's like this mutual fascination with each other. The parent is surprised at how the child is developing and growing and the things that they're saying and doing, and they're touching the child's facial features and observing their facial features like, oh, they look more like me, or they're coming into their own. And you're just so into your child, and your child is into you too. They're touching your face and they're learning and preoccupied with you as well. And the same thing in your relationships, romantic relationships. You get with somebody, you're preoccupied with them and you're looking at their features and you're like, I love your eyes. I love your lips. You might touch their ear. You might touch their nose sometime. You're just fascinated with each other. You have like a preoccupation with each other. So you see, the relationship between like the parent and the child and then romantic partners is similar. Oh, and also too, like with the parent and the child, they engage in baby talk. Gaga goo goo. Oh, come here. Let me see. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Bring your whoopee. You know, you're doing all that little talking and stuff and the baby is talking back to you. And the same thing in relationships. We talk in baby talk. Hey, baby, come here. Oh, I just love you so much, girl. Oh, boy, you just make me so happy. You know, you do those things with them, too. Call them honey. Hey, honey, sweetie, baby. See, when you do that, you're engaging in a little baby talk. Now, when we look at attachment theory in regards to relationships, you're going to see that adults who have like secure attachments, they're going to be secure in their relationships. They feel confident that their partner is going to be there for them and they're going to be there when they need them in the relationship. They feel secure and they feel comfortable being able to depend on other people and have other people depend on them. They feel comfortable being intimate with other people. They feel comfortable talking and opening up, being vulnerable. So adults that are secure, they are likely to be satisfied in their relationships. They're going to feel connected to their partners without feeling the need to be with them all the time. They're going to feel secure to be able to not be with them all the time. You'll see in their relationships, there's going to be honesty, support, independence, and deep emotional connections. So like I mentioned earlier, adults who were secure as children, they grow up to be secure in their romantic relationships. And another thing too is like adults who have like a good relationship with their parent or their caregiver, or they feel secure as adults in their relationship with their parents, they're more able to form secure relationships with new partners and they're out there dating and they have healthy boundaries. And that's why people always say, girl, what's his relationship like with his mother? If he's telling you that he hates his mama, he's cussing his mama out, he hates his daddy, he cussing his daddy out, that's a red flag. Now, for the babies that grew up and they weren't able to like regulate themselves, they always were crying. They always had to be around the parent. They couldn't calm themselves. The parent didn't calm them. You know, the people with anxious, resistant attachment, they oftentimes grow up to just be insecure in their relationships. They worry that other people might not love them completely. They're easily frustrated or they get angry when their attachment needs don't get met, when they can't be close to you, when you can't give them what they need, they get upset. They might demonstrate passive aggressive behavior. They give you the silent treatment and stop talking to you, and they get mad and they won't tell you why they're mad. And then their behavior is going to affect how they connect and how they bond with their partners. And so they feel insecure in the relationship. They might feel desperate for love and affection, and they get in relationships and they feel like their partner needs to complete them. Their partner needs to fix their problems. The partner is responsible for making them happy. You know, they want to feel safe and secure in the relationship, but because they don't know how to manage and regulate their emotions, they do the opposite of what they want. They want to feel safe. They want to feel secure. They want to feel loved. They want somebody to just want them, but their actions push other people away. You know, they bring a lot of pressure into the relationship and they can come off being clingy or needy or demanding. They come off being very jealous and they get very upset over little small things all the time. And they act like that because they have fear. They don't want their partner to leave them, but they don't realize that those actions and the things that they're doing, the way that they're behaving, is what's pushing the person away. And then there are the people who have like the avoidant attachment style. These are like the kids who go to strangers. They don't have a preference. They'll go to strangers. They go to the parent or whoever. And these kids grow up and it might seem like they don't really care too much about close relationships. You know, they'd rather do their own thing. They don't want anybody dependent on them. They don't want to depend on anybody. They don't want to rely on other people. They don't open up to other people. So normally they keep their distance from other people. They need their quiet time, their alone time. They don't mind being by themselves. They like their independence. They demand their independence. You know, they might come off like they don't need human connection to survive or to thrive. So they maintain, like I said, their independence. They isolate themselves from other people. They're normally like shut down emotionally. They're emotionally unavailable. like, say you're in a relationship with them and you have this big argument, some kind of problem has come up in the relationship and you're arguing or you're trying to get something out of them, they might shut down emotionally. The situation is hurtful to them, but they might not respond to you emotionally. They probably will just stop talking to you, stop engaging. And maybe you might threaten to break up with them and you're upset about something and they might act like they don't care. And it's not that they don't care. They feel hurt by it, but their response is just to shut down. Because as a kid, they were maybe punished when they opened up and when they were vulnerable. They learned early on to withdraw, to remove themselves, to shut down, to resist asking for help or saying what they need. They learned to distance themselves from other people when they feel hurt, when they feel sad, when they have emotional stress. So that's why their go-to is just to shut down, to just get away from you, to distance themselves, to not engage, because they're trying to regulate themselves. And then there are the people who are disorganized in their attachment. Like, those are the babies that didn't have a clear attachment pattern. Like, those are the babies that display aggression and be biting people, probably. They see people as a threat rather than as a support. And they switch between like being socially withdrawn and being aggressive and being defensive all the time. It's like confusing. Because now as adults, they're in relationships and they're the type to like pull you in and then they push you away. And they do that because they tend to get overwhelmed by their feelings. So in order to not feel, they want to avoid those feelings because they get overwhelmed by them. So once you start to get close to them, you get into them, you're feeling all lovey-lovey, and then they push you away. And then they pull you back in because they don't know how to handle it, how to regulate themselves. Like, they might have like unpredictable mood swings all the time. Just out the blue, they might just have a mood swing. They're scared that they're going to get hurt by their partner. It's like they're all over the place. You know, they want you. They're drawn to you. They might approach you and just be all over you and pushing themselves on you to want to just be with you and talk to you and get with you. And then you give in and then they have this fear of you getting too close to them. So they push you away. They ghost you. They disappear or they act with attitude and they have a hard time connecting and just forming bonds or forming meaningful, healthy relationships. They're not able to maintain healthy, meaningful relationships with other people. So it gets deep, y'all. You know, a lot of people want to be in relationship. They want to date. They want to be married. They want to be booed up. But a lot comes with it. There's a lot to consider and there is a lot to discover when you're out there dating and meeting new people. Now, even though I'm sharing these different types of attachment styles, I don't want y'all to go out there and put people in a box. I don't want you to be saying, oh, this is the type of person that they are. Oh, they're avoidant. They're this, they're that. Because these attachment styles, they are just a way to understand a person's behavior. It's not a description of their personality. A lot goes with personality. So this is just informing you and giving you the education about the different types of attachment styles. Now, just because somebody might have a secure attachment style, they can still demonstrate behaviors of somebody who has an insecure attachment style. They can still demonstrate behaviors of avoidant, resistant attachment or disorganized. Somebody who's avoidant, they might still be able to form secure attachments with somebody. So we can't put people in a box, but our attachment styles do have an impact on how we approach our intimate relationships, how we approach marriage, how we approach parenting. It's all connected. And in relationships, it's important to know it takes two. So you're bringing into the relationship your attachment style, your personality, your past experiences, and a host of other things. And they're bringing theirs too. And both of your attachment behaviors has an impact on how you interact with each other. And that's why there can be a lot of conflict and confusion in relationships. That's why people break up and they end up divorcing. And then they just continue this unhealthy cycle of relationships. And then their kids continue the cycle. So based on your attachment style, it determines how you function in your relationships. Now, for the most part, As adults, we all want to be in long-term relationships. We want somebody who's attentive, who's warm, who's loving, who's sensitive to our needs. Basically, we want somebody who's secure, but we don't all get what we want. We don't all end up with secure partners. Many times, secure people end up in relationships with insecure partners, or people end up in relationships with partners who confirm their already existing beliefs about attachment relationships. Like, for example, the person who is the pursuer in their relationships, they might have low self-esteem. They might feel desperate for love and for affection, and they need someone to complete them, and they need somebody to make them feel whole. They are more codependent, but they keep choosing people who are emotionally unavailable. They choose people with an avoidant attachment style, the ones that they have to chase, who are distant, who don't care too much about close relationships. So it's like they desperately want love. They desperately want to be in a close relationship, but they keep picking people that they have to chase. They're picking people who cannot give them what they need. And then it's like the more that you pursue the distant person, the more the distant person starts to feel invaded. They feel like they're being controlled. And then the person who's pursuing them, they start to feel ashamed and they feel rejected. And now they feel abandoned because their partner is not responding to their feelings and their needs. But then at the same time, they still are trying to meet the needs of their partner. So they've completely lost themselves in that relationship. And that relationship is not mutually beneficial. And even though the distant lover, the one who's always running, even though they might feel trapped in the relationship, they won't leave because they're afraid of abandonment. And since they have a hard time feeling like emotionally close to other people on their own, they need that partner that's pursuing them. They need them to satisfy their needs and their wants and their intimacy. They need to feel wanted and important, and a codependent person provides that to them. And it also, unfortunately, provides an opportunity for them to abuse that person in order to make themselves feel good. Many times, the distant lover is a narcissist. They have narcissistic traits. They will play mind games and they do things to draw the person in, get them close, and then they distance themselves once they see they've got you hooked. They tell you that you're so great, you're amazing, and then they ghost you. They pull away. They stop answering your calls, your texts, and they become abusive so that they can draw you back in again and you start chasing them again. They start telling you that you're too needy, you're too bossy, you're too demanding, you're too dependent, you're too emotional, you're too sensitive. You know, you're never satisfied. What I do is never good enough for you. And then the pursuer, the one that's doing all the chasing, you know, they notice and they feel like, you know, the distant lover, that he's selfish, he's inconsiderate, he's emotionally withdrawn, he's emotionally unavailable, he always has to have things his way, you know, is there something wrong with me? It's like, I'm not good enough. Why is he pulling away? Am I not pretty enough? Am I too fat? You know, am I not successful enough? Am I not smart enough for him? What's wrong with me? How come he doesn't want me? So it can be very distressing and there can be a lot of conflict. You know, in order to be in a healthy relationship, there has to be two whole separate people that come together. Two people that have their own lives, they have their own identity. But in codependent relationships, it's not like that. There aren't two separate whole people coming together. There are two people that are looking for somebody to make them whole. They're both looking for somebody to try to fix them, for them to fix the other person. And you can't experience real intimacy when you're constantly trying to change each other, constantly trying to control each other or force each other to behave a certain way. You know, in order to have true love and intimacy, you got to be able to recognize that you are two separate people, two different people, and you love that person for who they truly are. And then as the relationship grows, you develop trust and a closeness with the person where you're able to really see them for who they really are. Instead of trying to change them, you accept them. Now, sometimes a person will show you who they really are and you don't like it. Or you don't believe it. Instead, some people see it as a challenge. And because they might be having sex with the person, they let their excitement and they let all that desire that they have for them, they let that blind them. And they become very intrigued sometimes by the fact that their partner is unpredictable, the fact that they're unavailable. And so they begin to chase the person because they see it as a challenge, as they want this person to conform to what they want them to be. And they stay with the person. They'll stay with the person even though they feel uncomfortable, they feel unhappy, and for whatever reason, they just want to be with the person. They want them despite all of the bad things that they may have heard about them, Despite all of the disturbing behaviors that you might have seen or the character traits that they're showing you that you're like, I don't really like that, but you still deal with the person. Some people will stay with the person even though they're going through so much. They might feel controlled or neglected. They feel unsafe. They feel disrespected. Maybe their partner lies all the time and they're very manipulative. They know they can't depend on their partner. They can't rely on them for anything. Maybe their partner flies into like these rages and anger outbursts and they're very secretive, or they have baby mama drama, baby daddy drama, financial problems, drug addiction, alcohol abuse, and just like some serious problems. But against their better judgment, they will stay with the person. They don't leave. They stay and they try to hold the relationship together with sex. They try to sustain the relationship with fantasy and try to change the person. And they stay with the hopes that the person will change back to the way that they were when they first started dating them, when they first met them. And that's a toxic relationship, when you stay with somebody because of your fears, because of your overwhelming fears and needs. Oftentimes, toxic relationships and addictive relationships, they start off with like this intense attraction. You're like physically attracted to this person, drawn to them like a magnet, and you idealize each other. Oh, he's so perfect. He does this, he does that. Man, she's so dope. She's so perfect. But you ignore the differences. You ignore the red flags and the things that you don't like. And then you fall in love and you start making commitments. You move in together, get a car note together, buy a house, have a baby. You might get married. You make all of these big commitments without really knowing the person. And then you get to know each other. And once you get to know them and you get to see who they really are, you become disappointed. But you still don't leave, because you're hanging on to the fantasy of love, of being in love. So you try to change the person into being your ideal partner, but it's not working. So now you feel resentful and you feel unloved, and it leads to toxic behaviors on both parts. But with healthy relationships, it's different. They start with attraction too, but they also start with friendship. You start to feel comfortable with each other. And then as you get to know each other, you become more attracted to the person and you see them for who they really are. You see who they are. You see how they operate. And then you might notice some differences. You might notice things that you don't like, and you acknowledge those differences and you speak up and you tell them, you know, I noticed this, I noticed that. You bring it to their attention and see if they'll change the behavior. And then you decide what you can accept and what you can't accept. You decide if you can accept those differences. If not, you might decide, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and leave this situation alone. I'm gonna go ahead and end this with them. If you stay, you grow to love each other. You don't just fall in love, you grow in love. And then you make commitments and you compromise. And then the love and just the acceptance that you have for each other, it deepens as time goes on. And in the relationship, you feel loved, you feel supported. Now, that's more of a healthy relationship. Now, I'm just giving examples of what a healthy relationship might look like versus an unhealthy relationship. Everyone's relationship and experiences are going to be different, and it's going to look differently. You know, some people, they believe in love at first sight. Some people say that they fell in love at first sight. But it's important to know that love at first sight can be triggered by many things, but it's not love. It takes time to love somebody. Love at first sight, or when someone is saying that they love you right away, or they're trying to push love on you, that might be a warning sign. That might be a red flag. You know, if somebody wants to have sex all the time and it's just like compulsive sex, or they're spying on you, they're constantly calling or texting you, that's a warning sign. It's a red flag of something might not be right. And if someone is constantly ignoring your boundaries, like if you tell them, I don't want to see you, I don't want to talk to you right now, don't come over my house, and they just pop up at your door anyway, that's a warning sign. Somebody who's abusing you, controlling you, manipulating you, those are warning signs. Those are red flags. If you or your partner is using sex, or they're using the relationship as a way to cope with their own issues, like they're using sex or the relationship to help them cope with their feelings of emptiness or depression or anger or shame or anxiety, then that's a red flag. That's a warning sign. Like, if you don't have real intimacy in the relationship and you find that you or your partner is using sex or romance as a way to not talk about feelings or a way to not be vulnerable, to not talk about real issues, then that might be a problem. If you're not talking about real issues and talking about feelings and opening up to each other and all you're doing is just having sex to avoid talking, that is a red flag. That's a warning sign. Another warning sign that the relationship might be toxic is if you or your partner is staying in an unhappy, painful relationship because you're afraid to be abandoned. You have a fear of abandonment. You have a fear of loneliness. Then that's a sign of toxicity. That's something that might be a problem. If it's hard for you to commit to a relationship or you find yourself staying involved with somebody who's emotionally unavailable, then you may have a fear of intimacy, and that's a warning sign. If you have trust issues or you trust too much or you trust too soon or you don't trust enough, that's a warning sign. And if you find yourself, sacrificing your values or your standards just to be with somebody, then that's a red flag. It's a warning sign. A lot of people don't know when the relationship is toxic. They don't know the warning signs. They don't know the red flags. They ignore the red flags. But you know that your relationship is toxic when you start assassinating each other's character. You start belittling each other and you act like you're just playing. You start making disrespectful jokes about each other, or you start calling each other names like, you know, dumbass. You call each other B-I-T-C-H, punk, idiot, loser, pig. You start saying F you and insulting each other. It might start off as just playing, but over time, that behavior is going to cause problems in the relationships. Another thing that happens in toxic relationships is that people start controlling each other. They start checking up on each other, accusing each other of talking to people that they shouldn't be talking to. They purposely start making friends and family feel uncomfortable when they come over. They make them feel like they're not welcome. And they punish you by making you feel bad about something. They give you the silent treatment for days as a way to punish you. They demand to know what you're doing or who you're talking to on the phone. What were you talking about? They don't allow you to do anything without them. You want to go on a guy's trip with your cousins to Vegas, but she has to come with you. She wants to go with her friend somewhere, but you got to go with her. Y'all do everything together. And maybe they're telling you what you can and cannot wear or what you can and cannot eat. Some relationships, people start questioning where you are all the time. What you doing? Keep calling you all the time. They might become really angry or upset when you don't immediately answer their texts or their phone calls. All of these are examples of controlling behavior. But control can also come in the form of your partner making you do things out of guilt, guilt tripping you into stuff, throwing stuff back up in your face so that they can get you to do or act a certain way. Now, often in toxic relationships, there is jealousy. There's jealous, passive aggressive behavior. Being jealous, though, is not toxic. As humans, it's normal. It's normal to feel jealous sometimes. But what makes a relationship toxic are the things that you do because you're jealous, your behavior, and what people do with those feelings of jealousy. That's what makes a relationship toxic. Are they blaming you for those feelings of jealousy that they have? You know, maybe they're telling you, you doing stuff to make me jealous. You want me to be jealous. You're trying to make me jealous. You want me to act up. You know, maybe they're trying to change you, or they want you to do something to help them feel more secure. Or they're so focused on changing you because they don't want to deal with their own feelings of insecurity. And that's why they're jealous. Maybe they're going through your phone, checking your text messages, your emails. They want to know who you're with and where you're at all times. Maybe they're telling you how you can and can't dress. That's jealousy and control at the same time. They're telling you who you can and can't hang out with. Or they have an attitude and they're pouting and they're putting all this negative energy out there because they're jealous of something or someone that you're around or something that you're doing. Or maybe there's jealousy in the relationship because one partner is successful, they're reaching their goals, a lot of great things are happening, but you can't get yourself to think or feel positively about their success, or vice versa. They can't feel positive or happy about your success either because they're jealous. All of that is jealous behavior. And jealous behavior is also passive aggressive behaviors too. Like them saying, you know, they might ask you, hey, can I drive you to the store? Or just because they want to be with you, that's their way to try to see what you're doing. And you tell them, no, I'm fine. I'll drive myself. And then they get passive aggressive on you. Well, you never have to worry about me asking to take you anywhere ever again, or I'll just stay at home then. Now they're copping an attitude with you. And then you say, man, okay, come on, just take me. So they do these things to try to get you to behave a certain way. Another way people act passive aggressive in relationships is if they start pulling away from you, they start giving you silent treatment, they start having attitudes as a way to punish you because they're feeling jealous about something, or if they often act mad and they don't tell you why they're upset, they just mad all of a sudden and you keep on asking them, well, what's wrong? Nothing, nothing. And you can tell something is wrong. That is passive aggressive behavior, and it's an unhealthy communication, and that can make a person feel like they have to walk on eggshells around you. And then that leads to a lack of trust and a lack of intimacy in the relationship. It's toxic behavior. And sometimes in toxic relationships, people do, though, intentionally play games and they play with their partner's feelings because they are trying to make them jealous. They want them to be jealous. They're trying to test the partner to see how much they care. They want to test their feelings, and they manipulate each other, play mind games by making them jealous on purpose so that they can feel more secure in the relationship. And sometimes people try to make each other jealous in the relationship because maybe one of the partners has cheated in the past, or they've done something to make you not trust them or to harm the trust. So sometimes people are insecure, or they're dramatic, and they need affirmation. They need attention. They need their partner. They need to know that their partner loves them or cares for them. So they do things to make them jealous and get a reaction out of them. And that's toxic, and it's unhealthy. Also, in toxic relationships, there might be a lot of arguing, a lot of bickering, like constant bickering with each other, because a partner might never admit when they're wrong. They don't say sorry. They don't take ownership for the wrong that they do. They flip it around on you. They get defensive. They point out your flaws, but they never own up to their own. And then the relationship doesn't grow. It just goes in circles. They're bringing up the past, arguing, just stuck in negativity. Maybe one partner is unhappy with themselves or with their lives, so they bring this constant negativity into the relationship, and they bring you down, and they put pressure and expectations on you to make them happy, and that can become toxic. We are all separate, individual people who are responsible for our own happiness. Other signs of a toxic relationship is like lack of support. You don't support each other's goals. The time that you spend together, it doesn't feel positive. You might start competing with each other, and you feel like the person doesn't have your back, or you don't have their back. And maybe the communication is toxic. You don't speak kind and sweet and respectful to each other. You talk to each other in a hostile tone. There's a lot of sarcasm and judgment and just criticism all the time. Maybe you just stop talking to each other altogether. You avoid talking to each other. And there's resentment. Sometimes people hold grudges against each other in relationships, and they'll hold grudges for years. And then that frustration and all of that resentment, it just builds up. And that's why they're arguing all the time over little, small, trivial things. Another sign that the relationship is toxic is if you find yourself being dishonest and you're lying about where you are, about who you're with, just so that you can avoid spending time with your partner. You know, if you're like, oh, I'm going to the gym after work, but you're really at your boy house watching the game and you don't want to go home because you dread going home. So now you're lying about things that you're doing. You know, I'll have to work late. Not that you're cheating or anything, but you're lying and finding other things to do to avoid spending time with your partner. That means the relationship might be moving into a toxic space. Also, too, when you start to see patterns of disrespect, like, say, for example, they don't come home at a decent time after work. They always show up late. They're forgetting events. They don't care about your time. They're not considerate. That can be a sign that the relationship is moving towards toxicity. And maybe, too, maybe they're making financial decisions and big old huge purchases, taking a lot of money out of the bank accounts without even consulting or talking with you, then that can also lead to a toxic relationship. And if you're constantly feeling stressed out, or you find yourself being a people pleaser and you just go along with whatever your partner wants to do, even when it goes against your wishes and your comfort level, and you don't speak up about it, then that is a sign that the relationship might be toxic. And also too, if you're not doing hobbies that you used to enjoy, if you're giving your partner all of your time and you don't have free time because all of your time is wrapped up in the relationship, it's wrapped up in your partner and what they have going on, you know, you're neglecting your health and your self-care, then that's a sign of relationship toxicity. Also, people, when they're in toxic relationships, sometimes they lose other relationships. They might stop spending time with their family and their friends because they want to avoid getting into it with their partner. Oh, my boyfriend don't like her. My husband doesn't like my mother. So I'm not going to go over there, or I'm not going to let her come over, or whatever the case may be. They might avoid their friends and family so that they cannot make their partner upset. Or they might avoid their friends and families because they don't want to have to answer questions or explain what's going on in their relationship. Another sign that the relationship might be toxic is if you find yourself walking on eggshells. You see the problems in the relationship, but you don't want to bring it up because it's going to cause some problems. It's going to cause an argument. It's going to cause tension. So you don't say anything. You just keep it to yourself. That's a sign of a toxic relationship. Oh, also too, some people withhold affection. Like, they won't give compliments, they won't give hugs, they won't give kisses, they won't have sex because they're using that as a way to get what they want for their partner. They're using it as a way to control them or to change their behavior or get them to do or become exactly what they want them to be. And that's a toxic behavior too. People stay in toxic relationships for so many different reasons. Like I said earlier, some people are in toxic relationships and they don't know. They don't see the signs. They don't know the signs. But some people do see the signs. They know they're in a toxic relationship and they stay because they feel like their partner has potential.
'Cause you've got potential.
And so they wait around hoping that their partner will change. And some people will try to change themselves. They start thinking, well, maybe if I change, then my partner will change. And then for some, they stay because there's just so much emotional abuse. And the person has just become so broken in the relationship that the more time that passes, the more difficult it is for them to leave. Fear, though, is like one of the biggest reasons why people stay in unhealthy relationships. They have attachment, they have emotional issues that need to be addressed. Some people have a hard time being alone. They would rather be in an unhealthy relationship just to say that they have somebody rather than being alone. So because they have such a difficult time being alone and they need to have the company of a significant other, they will stay in a bad situation because the unhappiness and the problems that come from the relationship, they feel like they can handle that better. That feels better to them than the fear and the discomfort that they feel from not being in a relationship at all. Another reason why people stay in toxic relationships is because of low self-esteem. People will often settle for what they think they deserve. Oftentimes, when people don't believe that they deserve more than what they're being given, or they don't think that they can do better, they will stay in an unhealthy, toxic relationship. Some people also stay, though, because they feel like they've invested so much into the relationship. Like, they put years into the relationship, money, love. They have children together. Maybe the person was in prison and they held this person down, or they waited for them to get out and waited all these years. And now they're together and they feel like they just invested all that time that they don't want to let it go. You know, maybe the person cheated on them before and they feel like, okay, we survived that. We survived you being unemployed. Whatever they feel they've invested in the relationship, that is what leads them to try to stay and make it work. Like, the more time that they invested emotionally, the more some people will try to make it work. even though it's not working or it may never work, they just get caught in this cycle. And as I mentioned before, people lose themselves. Sometimes people are desperate to have or maintain a relationship, so they'll do anything to try to keep the person. They'll give all their time, all their energy to try to please their partner. They overlook the warning signs. They become completely dependent on their partner. And sometimes people in abusive relationships where there's physical, sexual, emotional abuse, manipulation, you know, where the partner is demanding and they make you feel like you have to choose between yourself and the relationship. And basically, in order to keep the relationship, you give yourself up. You have to give up on yourself in order to make the relationship work with a demanding, abusive partner. There's just so many different dynamics. Like, a person can be in a relationship with someone who's an addict, who's addicted to drugs and alcohol, or maybe their partner has a mental health disorder or a personality disorder, like narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. And if you don't know the signs and the symptoms of these different disorders, you won't know what to look for early on, because these partners, though, they're going to be manipulative. They're going to be abusive. They will threaten abuse. They will abandon you when they don't get their way. They will control you. They will use tactics like gaslighting, criticism, emotional abuse. They'll use different tactics to try to maintain power and control over you. They want control. And the longer that you entertain them, eventually they will get what they want. And if you grew up with a controlling parent, then that also plays out in the person's adult relationships. So they might need therapy to try to break this pattern and get down to the root of what's going on. But it's important to know that a toxic relationship, like I mentioned in the beginning, it's a little different from abuse. In abusive relationships, it's one person in the relationship who's trying to control the other and dominate the other. They use different tactics, like psychological tactics, violence, physical violence, sexual violence, verbal abuse, or a combination of all of those and more things. In abusive relationships, there's going to be an abuser, the person who harms, and a person who is the victim or the survivor. Now, the dynamic in toxic relationships, it's different from the dynamic in abusive relationships. If you're in an abusive relationship, I want you to know that it is not your fault. The only person at fault is the person that's abusing you. They're the problem, not you. They are to blame for making the choice to harm you. Now, every relationship is going to be different, but in healthy relationships, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be problems that arise, but then there's also give and take. There's respect for each other's needs and feelings. And when there is conflict and there's problems, people in healthy relationships, they communicate, they talk about it, they work together to make decisions to solve the problem together. There's no need for playing games because both people feel secure in the relationship. They can be direct with each other and they don't have to hint around at things. They don't have to manipulate each other, or they don't have to assume that the partner should know what you're thinking and what's on your mind. You don't have to read each other's mind because you've learned how to communicate in healthy ways. I also want to say, if you think that you're in a toxic relationship, it's important to pay attention to your mental health. Pay attention to any changes in your mental health. Take care of yourself. Has your personality changed? Has your self-esteem been affected, like, negatively? Try to pay attention to those red flags. Sometimes when you're in the thick of the relationship, it's hard to tell. Like I said, it's hard to tell that it's toxic. Now, no one gets into a relationship and says, oh, I want to be unhappy. I want to be miserable. No, nobody says that. Nobody wants that. And no one deserves that. When people hold on to toxic relationships, it stops their personal growth and it can block you from having the love that you deserve. But also, I know that walking away from a toxic relationship, it's not always easy. And it can leave a person feeling worthless. They feel hopeless. They might feel helpless. But guess what? You're not. You are not worthless. You are not helpless. You are worth so much more. You are worth way more than what a toxic relationship has to offer. And eventually, you'll see it too. Let me tell you how. You know what time it is. It's time to cope. It's time to pull out our coping toolboxes. I'm going to give us some tools to toss in there today to help us cope with toxic relationships. Remember, we are going to be building this coping toolbox every time that we're together so that we can keep everything that we need that can calm us during times of distress and help us to express how we feel in healthy ways. The first thing that I want you to do is stop trying to change your partner. We can't change anyone but ourselves. You can waste years and years trying to change somebody who will never change. Instead of hoping and wishing and fussing for them to change, try to focus on you. Change your behavior. Focus on making yourself happy. Change is possible, but it's possible within ourselves. And that might help you to feel better and to grow stronger in your self-respect and your self-esteem. Like, learn how to express your feelings, learn ways to express your wants and your needs and set boundaries in healthy ways. Pursue your hobbies. Go after those goals and those dreams that you have. Practice self-care. And soon enough, soon and very soon, you'll start to notice that your happiness and your self-esteem and your self-worth is not dependent on other people. You'll start to see that you don't need other people to make you happy. You don't need anyone to fix you or to change you. You are enough. Something else that I want to say is that I know I touched on so many different aspects of this topic today, and I said a lot of things, but I just want you to know that I'm not here telling you to leave your partner. No one can tell you to leave your partner. Only you can decide whether it's time to stay or it's time to go. But be mindful of the reasons that you choose to stay. Be mindful of the reasons why you choose to go. Sometimes power lies more so in not what you choose to do, but what you choose to stop doing. It's important to just pay attention to how you feel and just ask yourself some questions. You know, is this relationship taking from me or is it giving to me? Is it giving me more than what it's taking from me? And just look at your relationship and ask yourself, you know, is my partner and I, are we growing together, or is he growing and it's taken away from me? Is he growing at my expense? Am I growing at his expense? Or are we doing it together? Do I feel nervous? Do I feel uncomfortable when I'm around my partner? Does my partner feel uncomfortable or nervous around me? You know, does this relationship allow me and my partner to be our best selves? Or does it turn us into people that we don't recognize, people that we don't like? These are questions that you have to ask. And also, it's important to just accept the relationship for what it is. Accept that you are in a difficult situation, that you're dealing with a very difficult relationship. Acceptance is important. You have to accept the fact that this relationship is very hard, and also that you're trying to do something to make it less difficult. First, when you accept the reality that the relationship is difficult in the first place, that opens you up to have more insight. It opens the door to you having compassion for yourself, for you to have wisdom. The more that you can accept where you are right now in the relationship, the greater capacity that you have to change your situation. Accept your reality like it is. Accept your relationship. Accept your partner. And think about what that means for you. When you accept the truth, it can help to give you courage. It helps to give you the strength and the capacity to decide whether this relationship is the best choice for you, if it's the best option or if it's not the best option. And it can also just give you clarity so that you can sit and you can decide what's best for you. In any relationship, you know, communication is very important. So if you're in a relationship and you're in a toxic relationship, try not to lie. Try to tell the truth. You know, if you had a Christmas party at work, but you didn't invite your partner, don't lie and say, oh, I didn't invite you because there's no plus ones this year. Or don't judge them and say, I didn't invite you because you're too jealous and I know you're going to find a way to start something with me. You don't want to communicate with them like that because that's just going to start an argument. Instead, just tell the truth and be direct. You know, when you're at my work events, I feel nervous, I feel jittery, and I can't relax, so I didn't invite you to the Christmas party. I'm sorry that I hurt your feelings. Like, that's more direct instead of going all around it and also just judging and blaming the person. Oftentimes in toxic relationships, one partner might always be telling you that you're the reason why I'm so sad all the time. You're the reason why I'm mad. You're the reason why I'm jealous. You're the reason why my head hurts. You're the cause of all of these bad feelings and emotions that they have. But I want to tell you, please know that that's not true. You are not responsible for their emotions. Everyone is responsible for themselves. Everyone has to find ways to regulate their own emotions. And that's where therapy comes in and why it can be helpful to talk to a mental health professional. Because especially if you're in a relationship, it's just important to learn about the symptoms of codependency. And then therapy can also just help the person to work through some of the shame and some of the abandonment and the pain that they've experienced and the trauma from childhood. And a therapist can help also with building your self-esteem, teaching you how to be more assertive, how to communicate, how to get your needs met and to express your feelings and express what you need in healthy ways. And also just learn how to nurture yourself and how to meet your own needs. Therapy can be very beneficial, and it can just also help with some of the depression, the stress management, the anxiety that you might feel, and just so many other things. Another thing that you can do if you're in a toxic relationship and you want things to change and you're waiting to see if things can change, put a deadline. You know, if things don't change in the next 6 months or 8 months, a year, I'm going to do XYZ, or just give it a certain amount of time. And during that time, just give it everything that you've got. If you got to go to couples therapy, if you got to go to individual therapy, if you're working on communication together, or whatever it is, give everything that you have to try to repair what's broken. And then if things don't change, then you'll know the answer at that time of what it is that you want to do and what your next move will be. It's also important to just be honest with yourself, because sometimes your partner isn't the only cause of the issues in the relationships. Sometimes we are contributing to a toxic relationship. So it's important to just look at, what's your role? What is my role? What are some things that I can do differently? Am I the pursuer? Am I the distant lover? You know, am I the disinterested one? Am I the enabler? Am I like the helpless one all the time? Am I very critical all the time? Am I the abuser? Do I like not know how to communicate? Am I the non-communicator? Am I the one that's like always trying to rescue my partner? Am I the one that justifies everything? Am I the one who's like living in a fantasy right now and hoping for this person to become someone that they may never become? So just pay attention. What is your role? Who are you in this relationship? And what do you do that contributes to some of the toxic behavior? And then try to move yourself out of that role, shift into something else. And then stop making excuses. You know, like I said, be honest. What do you want from the relationship? Have you ever gotten what you wanted from this relationship? Have you ever had it? How different is what you want from the relationship from what you have right now in the relationship? And how long has it been that way? Do you always feel like this? Does the way you're being loved in this relationship feel like love? And if it doesn't feel good for you, then maybe it's not good for you. So you want to just pay attention and be honest with yourself. What do you want? What are you getting and what are you not getting? And you also want to ask yourself questions like, you know, how do I create closeness in the relationship? Am I the one that's giving up all my hobbies and my friends and never disagreeing just so that I can be close to this person? Am I the one that is pleasing and doing all of the work in the relationship just so that I can stay close to this person? So you want to look at those behaviors so that can give you a little insight. You know, how do you avoid? Maybe you're avoiding closeness. Do you crack a whole bunch of jokes? Are you always giving advice? Are you always talking about other people's problems so that you're not focused on your relationship and focused on yourself? Are you gambling? Are you shopping a lot? Are you having an affair right now and that is keeping you from being close to your partner? All of these things, they take away from the intimacy in your relationship. So it's important to just take a look at those things and just see, how am I contributing to this toxic relationship? And also, I just want to say that if you have ever been physically or sexually assaulted by your partner, that's not toxic. That's abusive. If you've been physically abusive towards your partner, or you've been sexually assaultive towards your partner, please stop right now. Stop doing it and go get help from a mental health professional. Please go and talk to somebody. Like I mentioned before, I'm not here to tell anybody whether they should stay or whether they should leave their relationship. But sometimes you just have to know when to let go. If you're experiencing emotional abuse, physical abuse, this person is constantly criticizing you and judging you, lying to you, cheating on you. You feel lonely. You don't feel like you're connected. You don't feel secure in the relationship. You don't have intimacy. It might be time to let go, but that's something you have to decide. Everyone knows how much they can take. Everyone is different. But sometimes none of these things are happening. Maybe you're not experiencing any of the things that I just said, but you just don't feel right about the relationship. You don't feel like it's for you. It might be time to let go. It just doesn't feel right. So maybe you can let go. Maybe you can feel the distance between the two of you. Maybe it's time to let it go. Oftentimes, it takes just as much resourcefulness, energy, and strength to stay in a bad relationship as it does to leave. But you can change your mindset, change the way that you're thinking about the situation, and that can help you to gain insight, and that might help to give you the push that you need to move forward, to make your next decision, to make your next move. No relationship is going to be perfect. All couples fight. They're going to hurt each other. They're going to say and they're going to do things that they shouldn't do. That's a normal part of growing together, loving together, living together, and just getting to know each other more. But the problem comes when the relationship turns abusive or if the relationship turns toxic. If you're in a toxic relationship, please don't feel ashamed. It's easy to get caught up. It's easy to get in a toxic relationship. It can happen to anybody. I just want you to know that we all deserve to be happy. We all deserve to be in healthy relationships. You are worthy. And on that note, that's all the tools that I got. Go ahead and put those coping toolboxes away, y'all. It's time for one of my favorite parts of the show, movie therapy, music therapy. I would like to dedicate today's episode to the song called I Forgot to Be Your Lover by William Bell. And the song says,
have I told you lately that I love you? Well, if I didn't, darling, I'm sorry. Did I reach out to hold you in my loving arms? Oh, and you needed me. Now I realize that you need love to spend my life making love to you. Oh, I forgot to be your lover. And I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Oh, I forgot to be your lover.
I believe that. I receive that. And I mean that. It's coping season, y'all. Thank you for joining me this week. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. You are not only listeners, you are my co-hosts, and we are a community. And I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your stories, experiences, and thoughts related to life issues, topics you'd like to hear discussed, or questions you'd like answered. Please visit me on the web at drtinaweb.com and click on Ask Dr. Tina to submit your questions, thoughts, and more. Tune in every Wednesday to hear my response. You can also check out the show notes as well as other contact information on the website. In the meantime and in between time, for additional updates, conversations, and more ways to interact, please connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Tina Webb. That's DrTinaWebb. Feel free to share your thoughts from the show on social media using the hashtag Coping Season Podcast. Lastly, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you are listening to help others find the show and learn to cope just like you. I appreciate and read every single review. Thank you so much for listening to the show and for spreading the word to all of your friends, family, and coworkers. I so appreciate it. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.